Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology, and today I'm joined by my buddies Kip and Spencer to talk about the astrology of sports. We're going to talk a little bit about the NBA and some big news that's been breaking there. Damian Lillard was traded, so we're going to talk about that and some other NBA stuff. Should be pretty fun. We're going to look also at the World Series and the Major League Baseball playoffs that are going on right now and some of the astrology surrounding the World Series, maybe some predictions about who might win the World Series. We are also going to take a look back at some of the forecasting we did for players in the NFL and some updates on the astrology of the NFL. So a lot of fun things to look at today. And as always, before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe and share your comments and reflections, especially if you're a fan or if there's something you'd like to see us cover in a future episode or something like that. Just drop it in the comment section and tell us what your what team you're following and maybe what astrology you've noticed. If you follow the astrology of any athletes or teams, we'd love to hear from you guys. You can find a transcript of any of the daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com. I'll be very glad to introduce you to Kip and Spencer and where you can find their work as well. So be sure that you stick around because I will tell you more about their good work as well. And on that note, let's bring them on. Hey, Kip. Hey, Spencer.
Hey, Adam.
Welcome back. Hey, Adam. How you doing?
Good. It's good to see you guys again. There's been a lot of it's so funny, you know, over the summer things were really quiet. We did our first show and then I've gotten a ton of emails from people being like, you know, you guys got to do one again. And then Spencer was like, are we ready to do one again? And I was like, yeah, I think like once a month is pretty good to check in and see how things are going, especially now that it's October, the Major League Baseball playoffs are going on. NBA season's about ready to gear up again. We're getting into like about maybe a quarter of the way through the NFL season. So it's a good time for updates.
Yeah. Big trades, big injuries.
You
know, baseball's getting, is heating up here. So it's a great time.
I mean, we're going to, we did some predictions. We looked at some charts of quarterbacks and players in the NFL. We're going to circle around to that later in the show today. I think what we're going to start with, especially since Spencer's a Bucks fan and has just gotten the good news that Damian Lillard will be joining his already powerhouse of a team. But yeah, let's talk about the astrology of what's going on, because that there's some really interesting astrology that you've been looking at with regard to the charts of the players involved with that trade.
Yeah, let's bring that up, and then we can check out Lillard's chart. And Giannis here.
You know what I haven't done that I'm is kind of silly that I haven't is I haven't looked at the Synastry. And here it is.
There it is. So we have Damian Lillard's chart up here, July 15th, 1990, Oakland, California. Now remember, these are both untimed noon charts. And then we have Giannis Antetokounmpo, December 6th, 1994, Athens, Greece. Yeah, some really interesting stuff with their Synastry. First thing I'm noticing is Giannis's north node at 14 degrees of Scorpio conjoining Damian Lillard's Pluto at 14 degrees of Scorpio. And that decan, that 10 degree section of Scorpio, has a lot to do with merging in a deep emotional relationship. Like, you know, in his book 36 Faces, Austin Coppock calls that decan mutual distillation. So it's about combining forces and about like, well, sometimes it can be a good combination, sometimes it's a challenging combination. But I do think in this case, they combine very well. The two of them have sort of been prefacing this union for quite some time, with Damian Lillard saying that Giannis would be his preferred person to win a championship with, and Giannis picking Dame number one overall in like the all-star draft when they kind of pick teams at the all-star game. That's kind of something they've been doing over the last few years. Couple other things I thought were really interesting about their synastry here is, first of all, Damian Lillard has a awesome Jupiter Kazemi of the sun, right? So he's very, very lucky, fortunate, a great leader. So he has Jupiter in Cancer, exalted, conjoining the sun. And I talked to a friend of mine who is a Portland fan who has pretty strongly that Dame Lillard is a Libra rising as well. So that was his guess as far as his constitution, which would put that Sun-Jupiter conjunction in a very powerful angular 10th house. Now, the challenge that we see in Dame's chart is an opposition with Saturn in Capricorn at 21 degrees of Capricorn. And what I thought was really interesting about their synastry with Giannis's chart is that Giannis has Neptune at 21 Capricorn and Uranus very close by at 24 Capricorn, which to me might suggest his ability to break up that opposition or to dissolve it on some level, like breaking up the boundaries and the oppositions for the success that he might have potentially. And also his south node is somewhat close to Dame Lillard's Mars in Taurus. And one of the techniques I really look at quite a bit is whether a malefic or a benefic planet is conjoining the north or the south node of the moon. And we can increase good or bad fortune with the north node or decrease that same fortune with, for example, the south node contact with a challenging planet. So this may reduce Damian Lillard's challenges with having to carry the weight himself on some mm-hmm. level with Mars and Taurus here.
That's brilliant. I love that. That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about this duo. I don't know if you could think of a better match of skill sets with Giannis's gravity of being able to pull defenders down towards the hoop, and then Dame Lillard's limitless range on the court, just opening the spacing for all of the other players. You've of course got Chris Middleton as an incredible third player, or third banana, I guess you could say, and instead of a good second option, but not the greatest second option.
I am fascinated that Dame Lillard, the most prolific and accomplished rapper in the history of the NBA, has Mercury conjoined the South Node. That is amazing to me. I would never have guessed that.
That's awesome. Yeah, he's not a bad rapper. He's pretty good, isn't he?
I mean, for an all-pro NBA player, he's a fantastic rapper.
I have to say, I just realized that Damian Lillard is the inner ring. Yeah, he's borrowed some of his glory from my 23 degree Cancer Sun. We share that. I'm just kidding. But I just didn't realize. I never realized that he's on the 15th. I was born on the 16th, but we both have the 23 degree Cancer Sun. If only I had the exalted Jupiter exactly conjoined.
Right. Well, you know, one other thing about Dame's chart that kind of mirrors Drew Holiday when he got traded to the Bucks is that both Drew Holiday and Damian Lillard are born within about 3 weeks of one another, and they're both Aquarius North nodes. So they were both really trying to carry the weight of their teams before getting traded, and now they're kind of seeing themselves as part of a group rather than having to be this like force of an individual. So I'm feeling pretty bullish on his ability to have success in this new situation. One thing I wanted to point out too that was kind of interesting is that there's another kind of confirmation about him being potentially a Libra rising. One of the downsides of his trade news that came out is that he actually filed for divorce on October the 2nd from his longtime wife. So one of the things that we've been seeing lately in the sky is the South Node Mars conjunction in Libra. Yeah. And this is in his first house. And if his rising sign would be Libra, it would be the ruler of his seventh house and his second house, which means that in a divorce settlement, he could probably be losing quite a bit of his resources and money as well. And if this chart was correct, he'd be moving into a 10th house perfection year at age 33, which would seem to suggest the teaming up with the moon in Aries, but also just a focus on the 7th house with his divorce and increasing his independence with the north node on the moon there as well.
Really nice. Yeah.
I would just like to point out for anyone interested in financial astrology, it's obviously not the focus of this podcast, but historically Mars conjoined South Node markets. Woo! So if you want to just take a look back in the week that was and look at when Mars came close to that South Node and look at where the markets went, pretty clear indicator.
Yeah, I actually mentioned that South Node Mars conjunction in Libra in connection to which big crash was it? Do you remember? It was like a 1980 something.
The crash was it 87? It was during Bush 1.
Yeah, Yeah, it was around, I know that it was 87 because I remember thinking, oh, that's interesting that in 91 and in 87, when the Twins won the World Series, Mars was in Libra. Not that I really think they're going to win the World Series. I wish they would, but
you just said they were.
I don't know.
Did you hear that?
The node method isn't necessarily predicting Twins winning at all. I'm sorry to say.
I was just telling Skip, I'm like, the Twins are playing on house money right now. They haven't won a game in 19 years in the playoffs, let alone a series in like 21 or 2 or something like that. So I'm like, you know, they've checked some boxes for me that get me a little bit more engaged as a fan, and like, I'll take it. If they make a competitive series with the Astros, then I feel like I'm not sure I could ask much more than that at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a very, very casual Brewers fan, and they are already eliminated. So, you know, yeah. It's nice to get those victories when you can get them. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do to even make the playoffs in baseball. So it's a special thing when you can have some success there, mm-hmm. even if it's not the ultimate goal, you know?
Well, for Minnesota fans, and Kip probably resonates with this, I mean, it's really the only team men's team anyway, that we've seen a major championship from. I don't think the North Stars ever won one. I know the Vikings haven't. The Timberwolves definitely haven't. So I think the Twins in 87 and 91 are the only championships we've experienced.
And then we have the Lynx. The Lynx won 5 in 8 years. Yeah.
They're like our dynasty team. But if you're into any men's sports in Minnesota, it's like the Twins are all you've ever tasted of that level of success. And that was, you know, for me, I was 10 years old. So
hey, the University of Minnesota wrestling team has won 2.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Well, and Minnesota, of course, there's like 3, I think, Minnesota collegiate hockey teams that have won the, like, Minnesota Duluth.
Especially the women's. Yeah.
I'll tell you, back in the day when the Twins were good, that was when there was not that much on television. And I didn't have cable when I was like this, about similar age as all of you, 10, 11, 12. So I was watching the World Series, and I remember, you know, it was Kirby Puckett. Was Chuck Knobloch part of those teams?
Second one, yeah.
And then there was Jack Morris. I remember these names from not even my own team.
So much personality on those teams. Just so much.
So there was.
So that was super fun watch. And they played the Braves, right? They were.
And it was, I think it was a 1-0 game that it ended up being. It was a classic because
Kirby
was
just. Yeah. That was didn't he hit like the game winner? Am I remembering?
That was to send it to game 7.
Okay. That was game 6. Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but anyway, the other thing that's interesting about this, one just as an aside, Damian Lillard in 2 summers from now will get the Jupiter return in his 10th house.
Ooh, nice.
On the sun. Mm-hmm. And that just strikes me right away as like, well, if it isn't right away that they win a championship, the future certainly looks bright with the Jupiter return on the horizon not too far from now. That would be not the 23-24 season, but 24-25. The playoffs would land as Jupiter was ingressing and going over his midheaven, I believe, in June.
This year during the playoffs, and you know, spoiler alert for what's coming up for me, Gemini is going to be packed. And Jupiter is moving into Gemini. And if you look at Giannis's Libra house, it's going to trine a ton of that stuff. Mm. Positive stuff is triggered.
Bucks have about a 3-year window with this too. Dame's on a 3-4 year contract, depending on player options. And that would really match up well with Damian Lillard's 11th house perfection year, having a really supercharged sun with, because you know, Jupiter Kazemi, and then Giannis would be out of his 6th house perfection. I'm a little nervous because Giannis is moving into a 6th house perfection at his birthday this year, so I'm nervous he might get hurt for, you know, around the playoffs for this year. But next year he'd be in a 7th house perfection, which a lot of teams you see being able to accomplish a significant goal in a 7th house perfection. So it really does make sense that if it's not this year, next year would probably be a solid bet.
You ride off into the sunset in the 7th house perfection year sometimes.
There you go.
Kip, do you want to add into the conversation about the NBA here?
Yeah, let me share. I've just got a couple charts I want to pull up, and kind of as much as anything, I want to share just kind of some main transits that are going to make up this season. So what I'm sharing right now is Nikola Jokic's chart for the, his chart is on the inside, and the transits for the year on the outside. And what we notice about this year when we pay any attention is that we have three guys. The guys I'm going to talk about generally as MVP candidates are Giannis, Jokic, Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, and Luka Doncic. Three of those guys are going through their Saturn return. One of whom won the NBA title, not the NBA MVP after winning it twice in a row, when Saturn was really close to his natal Saturn and frankly, right on top of his sun. And it's a guy named Nikola Jokic. He's a huge, I think he's Slovenian. I think that's how you pronounce the name of his home country. But he's so fundamentally sound that to me, it makes a lot of sense that a guy that ages slowly, that even though he's so huge at a time when other people that big tend to break down, he doesn't play a fast game. He's not a bad athlete, but it's more hand-eye coordination, arranging the game. And when we're looking at these transits and we don't know the houses, which is always so tough, I tend to look at those big transiting planets. And I just think that for Jokic in particular, this transit of Saturn is really important. One other thing I want to point out, because I'm going to get to this at the end, is pay attention to planets, especially benefics, that are in firehouses right in the middle of the chart. Because this is a really interesting thing I discovered about what's going to go on during the playoffs. So I'm going to switch it up here just really briefly. We're going to look at Luka's chart. Is it still sharing or do I have to reshare it? I thought I had that figured out last
time. No, you have to share it again. I feel like he's, just to make a comparison, he reminds me of like the Olajuwon or the Ewing kind of character on championship, on those championship teams. Although he actually won a championship. I don't think Ewing ever did.
Olajuwon's an Aquarius sun, just like Jokic there.
So. Oh, really? Yeah, it makes total sense. It's like kind of a boring player, but he's like amazing. Mm.
So here we have Luka, and I think Luka's in for a slower going year, and his team isn't really set up to succeed as good as he is. And I think that a lot of that has to do with, again, you have Saturn over the top of his sun, and there's really nothing beneficial going on to warm up this house. We do have for Luka, though, speaking of fire signs, and that has a lot to do with Mars as we get towards the playoffs. Luka, like a seemingly a ton of NBA players, has important planets in Scorpio. And for him, he's going to start the season off with Mars transiting through Scorpio. And then towards the playoffs, kind of what I'm hinting at is that Mars is going to be in Aries. And so if Luka makes a push during the playoffs, we're going to see Mars and Mars's own sign on top of just this really special Jupiter, Venus, conjunction that he has in Aries. But as we're going to see, other folks are even in a better position when it comes to that. So I'm going to really quickly, well, we looked at Giannis. The thing that I want to talk about with Giannis is that same Saturn return. What we saw last year was that Giannis got hurt. And because Giannis's Saturn is so early in the chart, I'm kind of worried not so much that he's going to get hurt in the playoffs, but that he's going to get banged up early in the year and it's going to go slow for him. That's because it really was when Saturn transited, when Saturn moved over that Giannis got hurt last time. Obviously, that's not a guarantee. This is one of those things where I wish I knew what house it was in.
And Jupiter is still retrograde, which is the ruler of his natal sun as well. So another thing that shows you that.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
So here we have Embiid, and Embiid's another guy. Saturn return. And Embiid has had a long injury history. Embiid had a bad offseason. His team is kind of in disarray. And we saw Embiid have just not a great playoff for him or his team. And we're going to see Saturn trigger this natal Mars-Saturn conjunction. And I just feel like this is not a great omen for Joel Embiid. Not my favorite guy, quite honestly. So I'm not going to shed too many tears, but it is a bummer when one of our superstars, you know, has tough stuff happen. But I really think that when this Saturn in a couple months moves back over this Mars-Saturn conjunction, it's not the greatest. So far we went through four guys, all going three of them going through their Saturn return. Luka not looking like that Saturn is encumbering his natal sun. And now we're going through the guy that I really think, if I had to pick of these five favorites to win the NBA MVP, it would be this guy. And this is Jason Tatum. And what I want to keep in mind is that the MVP is a regular season award. And Jason Tatum plays with Brown, another wing who just got his giant contract. They just traded for Jrue Holiday, who came from Spencer's team, who's a fantastic guard, the kind of lead guard that honestly is unselfish. You know, they've always had good guards, but haven't necessarily been as multidimensional, as dynamic as what they're getting with Jrue Holiday. And we've seen Tatum have a ton of success. And now we have Saturn moving through this packed house, conjoining what really is this really beautiful Pisces Jupiter that's kind of the lead in this untimed chart. But I think what we're going to see is we're going to see if Jason Tatum is one of those top flight superstars, the kind of guy that's an MVP candidate. When we have Saturn rolling through here, are we going to see prestige and authority, those kind of things that get crystallized and are the top line of your obituary? I know that's kind of a bummer thing to say out loud, but it's also one way people think about this. And I think when we see Saturn transit through this packed house, it's really kind of fish or cut bait time. I think they're going to be a really successful team. I can't see how they're not. But if Jason Tatum is, you know, one of those top five superstars in the league, one of those guys you can talk about as being one of the dudes, that this is the year we're going to see it one way or another. Who Jason Tatum is going to kind of get chiseled into stone this year. Finally, I can't do this without sharing my beloved Anthony Edwards. And I'm using his chart not only because I get to talk about Anthony Edwards.
I'm so glad you're going to. I was just like, we should look at his chart.
But the great part about, other than getting to talk about Anthony Edwards, is I get to talk about what's going to happen during the NBA Finals. And what that is, or I'm sorry, the playoffs. What that is, I'm going to move this up to May.
Do they ever make like Top Gun jokes with Anthony Edwards here? Like, isn't that name of that same actor that was Goose, right?
Oh, is that really? Is that true?
Is that his name? Am I conflating my names here?
I don't really know.
Do you know what I'm saying? What was Goose's name?
The actor. You should look it up.
I feel like that's what it is.
So here, yeah, it is his name. His name is Ant. So I proposed when Ant wasn't sticking as a nickname, I proposed Goose to be his nickname. I thought that would be hilarious.
Yeah,
but now it's awesome. Ant for sure. So what I want to focus on is, so the NBA playoffs are starting right at the end of April, beginning of May. And we are going to, in the middle of May, have this conjunction of the North Node and Mars. The semifinals, the conference semifinals, so to get into the conference finals, they're starting May 6th and 7th. And the conference finals to get to the NBA finals, that's starting on May 20th, 21st. So right in the middle of this, we're having this conjunction of the North Node and Mars. Remember we talked about the South Node and Mars being a whoop. Yeah. Well, the North Node and Mars, whoop, opposite. Lots of juice, lots of energy. And for my beloved Anthony Edwards, we see that this conjunction fits neatly with his natal Kazemi, perfect trine, and this trine in his natal chart with Jupiter. That, my friends, is a very positive sign for a guy who's trying to break through on the national level. We also, as I pointed out, are seeing for Jokic, he has his Jupiter, really happy Jupiter, right where this Pluto is. So he's getting that trine. And who is the other guy? And Giannis has a 14-degree Sag Sun. So we're getting the same trine. So a lot of folks are getting this pushed in. But I think that if we're going to talk about Aries and Mars, we're talking about that point of the spear breaking through the line of the enemy army. And that's really what Ant has to do for himself and for this whole franchise. So obviously, I think Ant's going to make to the conference finals because clearly it's in the stars. I'm all over it. Do either of you want to make any comments about either this happening during such a prominent time during the NBA playoffs, or you know, just how great Edwards is? That also works.
Yeah, I mean, oh, go ahead, Spencer.
I was just going to say, goodness gracious, great balls of fire. So you're great trying to fire, right?
Yeah.
So there you go. That's all I've got.
Let me show you guys. So I'll add to your here's Carl Anthony Towns' chart. I think one of the things that I find interesting about this chart is that this is probably a make or break year for him in terms of whether he stays with the Timberwolves long term or not, because the Timberwolves are going to be in a position where they're not going to be able to afford their roster. And the likelihood that they would hold on to a max player like Cat with the issues that Cat has overall. I mean, it's like he's a great player, but he's not a transcendent player. He's in the same class as Jokic and Embiid, if I remember correctly. And he was picked number one, and those guys are you know, like we would hope that a number one player in the same draft as those guys would be in the same conversation, and he's just not. You know, so when you're building your team around Anthony Edwards, he's the future. And Carl Anthony Towns reportedly has like a sense that the team is his. So there's like psychological issues around leadership in the team. And Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns is like, he has this way of bringing, I don't know, this is the way I would describe it. This is just my observation going to games and also listening to my favorite podcasts who talk about the Timberwolves. He has a way of making you feel like you're losing when you're winning. and I think some of that basically comes from the fact that he has real deeply seated insecurities. It's like, and I hate that for anybody, like, you know, that sucks. I don't want to ridicule someone for having insecurities, but he is like a very insecure person. If you ever listen to him talk at the mic, he overcompensates wildly. He makes egregious claims. Like this year, he thought he was saying, like, you know, whatever, we're better than the Nuggets, even though the Nuggets just won the champion. It just didn't make any sense. And he says a lot of crazy, stupid things. So, you know, the idea is that this is a make or break year for him. And I was wondering, like, well, what are his transits this year? And the one that really stands out to me, can you see the bi wheel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he's got the Jupiter Uranus conjunction opposite his sun.
Oof.
That's going to be happening mid to late April. That's interesting to me. You know, I have some theories and I'd like to hear what you guys think about it. He's in the mix of his Saturn return, right? He's got that going on as well. And I like, in one sense, I feel like if there were ever a time where someone needed to be catalyzed to break through their own BS in some way, it might be Jupiter Uranus opposing their sun. You know, like you could maybe he finds a new level to his game. Maybe there's more cohesion. Maybe with Anthony Edwards becoming more dominant, he feels like he can take a little bit. He just steps comfortably into a little bit more of a beta role, you know, which I think he'd be sort of better for him. But could this also be like, you know, I mean, the trade deadline is in February. If the Timberwolves aren't doing very well, the rumor is that they might try to trade him, more likely in the off season, you know. But I mean, if you take this forward a little bit too, this is April, so I think the playoffs start in late April, don't they?
Yeah,
I want to say it's like, so this would be around the start of the playoffs at any rate. So could you see him poised to take a next step? He's never been someone to put a team on his shoulders in the playoffs for the Timberwolves. It was Jimmy Butler, not him. You know, it was really what's the guy's name that was on the clip? Patrick Beverley. I mean, it was really, he was the emotional leader of the team when they faced the Clippers in the play-in and got in and then lost to Memphis. He's not like capable of putting a team on his back, but this could represent some kind of breakthrough in his career. I could see it going other way too, but then if you take it forward just a little bit more, you're going to have Jupiter. We don't know his exact time, right? But depending on where his moon lands, you know, he could have a Virgo moon. That would be entirely possible. In fact, I feel like that might be the case with someone who's kind of as nervous as he is. Mm-hmm. Not to say that all Virgo moons are nervous, but it's like a mercurial thing, and he's got to combust Mercury, so maybe the moon's in Virgo. But could you have Jupiter heading into a combination with his moon if he was born with the moon in somewhere in the later degrees of Leo? That's a possibility. But either way, the Uranus transit will stay within 1 degree of his natal sun all the way into late May. And then if you take it forward a little bit more, he's got his Saturn return at the same time. And then he's got all of those planets in Sagittarius that Mars in the North Node will be picking up on in trines a little bit. Go right.
I have a tarot thought with that opposition.
Yeah. Tell me, what do you think?
So first of all, you touched on something with his natal sun in the third decan of Scorpio. That 10 degree section of Scorpio is associated with the Seven of Cups card, which shows someone looking at an illusion of fame, fortune, love, lust, all of these things, and trying to figure out what is real and what isn't. There is like illusion qualities about discerning reality. There's also challenges in that decan about holding on too tightly to form that needs to be composted so it can be, the spirit can be liberated from the body, the transition from the final decan of Scorpio to the beginning of Sagittarius. Now, with the opposition, with the third 10 degree section of Taurus, with the Jupiter Uranus conjunction, there you have the Seven of Pentacles, where you see someone leaning on his like garden hoe, trying to assess his harvest or what he has grown over the course of his seasonal work. So that decan, it really shows humility in the face of nature. There is a lot of themes in that decan about being able to understand that there are forces greater than you that are outside of your control, and also reassessing your patterns and habits and actions and seeing if they worked or not. There's a spirit with that decan called the Litai, who are these hobbled women that followed behind this deity called Eight, who is related to rashness. Okay, so like by doing something rashness through hubris, you have to have like repentant prayer following behind. So maybe this is a time where he's finally realizing and releasing his illusions that he may have through the sun, releasing his old form and humbling himself and saying, maybe my actions haven't created success and I need to make a change.
So I love everything you guys are saying, and I got something to add to this. As a guy whose second child, first son, has a natal Uranus Jupiter conjunction. I live with this. It is right. A wild hair up the ass. And honestly, if I were gonna to add on to what you were saying, Adam, about him making you feel like you're losing when you're winning, I always think of him as a tough hang. Like he's a tough hang, and especially as like a fan of the team. Yeah, it's Carl.
exactly.
But there have been other guys who have been successful in the league, and I feel like to a certain extent they've had their own unique skill set, and he has that. He is a weirdo in that he is 7 feet tall and can shoot from everywhere on the court, but he doesn't seem to embrace that. And maybe that's what he needs to do. And maybe he needs to become like Dennis Rodman or the other guy, the Birdman. Was it Will Anderson? I forget his first name. But these guys were tough hangs. But then they just embraced the thing that they did that made them freakish. For Rodman, it was rebounding. And for the Birdman, it was literally flying around the court and just getting in the way of people shooting, like a goon that no one else could recreate. And so maybe Carl does break through and realize, you know what I need to do? I need to shoot from super deep, take lots of outside shots, give Gobert space to rebound, give Ant space to attack the rim, and I just need to be me. Like maybe he needs to get something pierced or dye his hair or something and really allow himself to like emerge.
Isn't him being accused of being sort of emotionally fragile or a little soft, I guess.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So maybe he just needs to nut up a little bit and toughen up.
Well, and it's like, you know, it is a Saturn return in Pisces too, you know, with the Saturn squaring his Mars and, you know, Saturn square Mars and Sagittarius from Pisces. It's like, you know, ride or die, but then I cry when I stub my toe. I just feel like there's something there that's, you know, it's just, it's like he has these moments of being like he was lights out when he came back from his injury and had this amazing like first game back from hurting his Achilles, I think it was. Or so he comes back and he's back and he has this awesome game and they win. And it's I don't remember who they were playing. It was a good team. And afterwards they were interviewing him and he's like, it's like a movie, blah, blah, blah. And everyone was like, you know, it was so great until you made it too great.
Until you
know?
Opened your mouth.
Yeah, he's exactly.
He's reminds me again. I'm going to scratch that. It's always someone else's fault with this guy.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
He is the biggest pointer at the refs and complainer and pouter. And it's just, he is a tough hang.
One of the qualities of a championship mindset, I think, is consistency, never getting too high or too low. And I think that there's nothing wrong with being sensitive. If you're a masculine type person and you have sensitive emotions, that is totally legit.
Of course.
But being able to like be calm under pressure and consistently, you know, not get, you know, get on the wheel of fortune, right? On the spinning wheel and connecting with the center hub, no matter what's going on around you chaotically. He needs to find that inner peace and that inner, you know, sanctity to be able to perform consistently.
And I think figuring out his role and accepting where it is just going to be ideal. So let's cross our fingers for Big Carl, Big Cat, that he figures that out, and that's best for him and the team.
Totally.
I mean, one thing I hate to imagine is that Jupiter, you know, Uranus opposition to his son is taking place as they're just starting to discuss his options because their playoffs are over.
Yeah.
You know, but
let's hope he doesn't get anything pierced then.
I know. Well, we are limited on time and I want to keep moving because we have a lot more to get through. Let's talk about the Major League Baseball playoffs, and Spencer's going to bust out his magic and tell us about who is going to win, which didn't you accurately predict it last year?
I accurately predicted both the World Series and the Super Bowl.
That's right.
So I have a method that I've been utilizing for the last year or two here, where I look at the coaches of the respective teams that are in the championship games, and I compare it to the charts of championship games and look for contacts with the nodes to their natal charts and vice versa. So I found there's a pattern of coaches that had contacts with the south node, where fortune is leaving the physical plane, of reduction of some sort, with the losing coaches of these championship games. Although in rare cases, sometimes you'll see a malefic planet on the south node in the winner because it is a reduction of bad fortune. And we also see some increase of good fortune when a coach has a planet on the north node, which is an increase of good fortune, material success. That's not as good of an indicator to success as the losing coach, actually, to be honest. Sometimes I'll look for secondary conjunctions for the winning coach, like benefics on their natal lights or something of that nature. The other thing that I look at with all of this is the condition of the planet that is hosting the sun. Okay, so oftentimes you'll see a planet, like someone who has the sun in Libra, if they have like the Venus in Virgo, which we're going to see in one of the charts, that's a really like a power outage on some level. Whereas if you have an Aries sun with a Mars, you know, Scorpio Mars, that's really empowering them at that period. So here we have the World Series Game 6. This is the closest I can get without knowing, you know, how things are going to play out. Generally, these series go roughly 5 or 6 games. So I kind of randomly chose game 6. I have it set as 7:03 p.m. Central Time. Usually the game is at around 8 o'clock with 3 minutes after Eastern Time. And I have it set in Arlington, Texas for sort of a, it's a guess. So it's not necessarily the accurate space, but I'm sort of foreshadowing some of my predictions here. So
like picking the stadium of the
team. Right. I had to pick somewhere, right? Yeah. Like, so I'm just going to throw you all a bone here, Twins fans. Like, just show you Rocco Baldelli's chart and see if he has...
It's Rocco.
Rocco? Okay, Rocco. This, I will admit, baseball is lower on my my knowledge base, but I trust the technique. So I feel confident with the technique, even if I don't know baseball as well as I do basketball and football. So Rocco, you know, does have some contacts with the South Node with Pluto here and whatnot. And he does have Venus and Mars conjoining during the World Series. But this wasn't enough to me to give him the go-ahead with it, because I want to show you some other contacts where there might be much more indication of that. So I'm going to go to another coach who I'm on the fence about that may have some part in this. So here we go. So this is Dusty Baker's chart. And Dusty won the championship. He was a great case study in the last couple of years because he lost the World Series with the South Node on some of his natal planets. And then he won the World Series when those planets retrograded back around and, like, I believe hit the North Node. So it was like really interesting case study with him. But the thing that's giving me a little pause with Dusty is that he does have a nodal return during
the World
Series.
He's the coach of which team, by the way?
The Houston Astros.
Just so
this is, yeah, so this is the Astros here. Usually I have I'm not sure why that didn't turn out this time.
Well, they're about to lose to the Twins, though.
We don't yeah, so he has a nodal return here, which does seem to suggest this being an important time for him. I don't know if he's considering retirement or anything like that anytime soon, but he's one of the older elder statesmen, and he did just recently win a World Series, so I could see something potentially with him maybe changing in his fate. But I want to, do you want to see the winner or the loser first?
Let's see the loser first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, so, I'm just noticing Dusty is almost old enough to run for president.
So, so my choice for the losing coach is Brian Snitker of the Atlanta Braves. And I know that they are the overwhelming favorites right now, because they just have such a powerhouse team. Even a guy who hasn't been following as much baseball, I know about Acuna and how crazy of a season he's been having with, you know, 40 home runs, 70 steals, and things of that nature. That's pretty incredible. But here is what I'm seeing, is he has the sun conjoined exactly almost to the South Node of this game here. Okay, which is one of the indicators of losing a championship game.
Wait, this is Snitker? This isn't Baldelli? Two Libra coaches are the way to go on the MLB, huh?
Well, there you go. I mean, maybe they're good at communicating balance needed to...
Wait a second. Was Baldelli was a Libra?
I'm not sure if his son was in Libra, but he had a packed Libra house.
Well, you know, wouldn't that be something if the Braves and the Twins played again?
We'll see. Oh, that is that interesting synchronicity. Yeah. So we'll keep that on our radar, right? The other thing that gives me some negative vibes for the Braves here is that we have his natal moon, give or take a few degrees, of course, because it is not a time chart. But I prescribe to the Jeffrey Cornelius school of sometimes the chart will tell us what we need to know, even if it isn't the correct time, because it is divination. And you can see here that Mars is exactly on his natal moon at 15 degrees of Scorpio. So that's activating a really difficult planet in his chart that could potentially be associated with accepting loss and composting and things of that nature. He also has Mercury on his natal Saturn as well. So that could also suggest, you know, a denial of something potentially. So that's what I've got for the losing coach. This South Node contact method has been very successful in a lot of different arenas, literally. So here I'm going to show you my pick for the winner. So here is Bruce Bochy. Is that his name? Bruce Bochy. For the Texas Rangers. And you can see that he has the exact opposite condition with the his Ooh. Natal sun conjoining the north node Ooh, wow. in the last degrees of Aries, which is he already has a really juiced up sun with an exalted sun, and increasing that good fortune is that looks pretty good to me here.
And Mars is going to be in Scorpio at this point.
And then Mars, that's the other thing. That's
Whoa.
So if we go back just real quickly, we go back to Snitker's chart. Okay. You can see that Venus is going to be in Virgo, in its fall in Virgo. So the ruler of his sun is fallen and opposing Neptune. So not a really great aspect for the ruler of his natal sun and his Libra stellium. So a difficult position for sure. But then that's we go the, back over.
That's the Texas, the Rangers?
So this is the Braves coach. We went back to the Braves coach because you were pointing out the ruler of his sun with Mars. But I wanted to make sure we saw that Venus, the ruler of Snitker's Libra stellium, is in its fall, in its the worst possible position it can be according to Hellenistic dignity, at the bottom of the Wheel of Fortune. So then we go back over here to Bochy's chart, and you can see that not only do we have the sun conjoining the north node in Aries, but also we have the ruler of his sun in Scorpio in its own domicile, Mars in Scorpio. So really juiced up, providing resources to that sun. The other thing that I really like about Bochy's chart here is he has a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction that we've just been talking about with an exalted Jupiter. And the moon of games 5 or 6 is going to be activating that Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, which is the height like of Jupiter's dignity there as well. Mm-hmm. Numerous testimonies for him having success. One last testimony. Oftentimes, I find Neptune sort of as a shadow malefic planet on some level, where it dissolves things on the physical plane. And he has the South Node going over Neptune, maybe reducing his, you know, dissolving need to transcend a physical disappointment on some level. So I'm picking the Texas Rangers over the Atlanta Braves to win the World Series.
Wow. It's good. It's good stuff. And I
so the,
go ahead. Were you gonna say something, Kip?
I just quickly looked it up, and the Rangers are +490 to win the World Series. So you're picking an underdog, especially at this point.
We'll see. So,
no, that's
so
great.
That's a great way to test the method, because if it plays out like this, then we can trust this method over the Vegas odds makers, which is that's some juice, right? As astrologers, as sports astrologers, when we get something like that right, then it sort of it brings us maybe some more credibility potentially.
Yeah,
I would unpack +490 for all of you, but I don't really know what it means. It means that it's underdogs. I'm not savvy enough gambling wise to. I just know that means that Spencer picked an underdog.
We'll see. You might make some money. I don't know, but this right? is not gambling advice. Like, that's our disclaimer, right? This is for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Here is a horary chart for the Twins Astros series. You know, it was really interesting. I did the Twins Blue Jays series, and it was very clear. It was like, if I remember correctly, and I won't bring up that chart because we're limited. We have limited time left. But in the Twins Blue Jays series, which of course I cast one for the series, I found that in baseball, when there's multiple game series, or in basketball with multiple game series, that I typically ask who will win the series, as opposed to doing each individual game. So that's how I generally approach series in the playoffs. Twins Blue Jays was, I don't remember exactly what it was. I want to say it was Jupiter. Anyway, the Twins showed up in the fifth house, and the Jays showed up in the 12th. And it was pretty clear cut. This one is different. There's different, maybe it was a little different, but either way, it was like, no, the Twins were like angular, and Blue Jays were, oh yeah, if I remember correctly, Blue Jays were actually, I want to say, so it was Venus and Mars. Let me just look really quick because I have it on my phone. I think it was Venus and Mars, and the comparison was really straightforward. So, and that's always nice when you get one like that. So here we go. So it was Venus showing up in Leo in the 11th house for the twins in the Blue Jays series. And the Blue Jays were showing up as Mars conjoining the south node in the first house, which usually in the method that I studied with Frawley in Horary would mean that you're going to get owned by the other team. So, and they were swept in two games, although the games were fairly close. But so this chart to me is far less obvious. I will tell you that right now, that I do not feel certain at all about this chart. You look at the twins, they're going to be given Mercury in the fifth, and the Astros will get Jupiter in the 12th. You know, right away, if it's just accidental dignity, I would be like, well, that's the twins are going to win the series. Problem is that Mercury's walking into combustion here. It's under the beams, but it's going into combustion. It's not a great, it's not like, doesn't make it particularly better than the 12th house. I'm not sure what to make of this. Typically, like, one thing that can tip the scales a little bit will be that the moon in the house of one team or another can put fortune on your side. The moon's next aspect is a trine to Mars and the south node in the fifth house. Don't know exactly what to make of that either. I wonder, it makes me wonder, with Mars as the ruler of the sixth, if there isn't an injury that tips the scales in one direction or the other. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about this one, guys. But I initially, what I'm going to do is I'm going to judge the series in favor of the twins, because I can't help but pick the team that has better accidental dignity when their essential dignity is pretty much a wash. I haven't looked at the minor dignity so closely. Anything stand out to you, Kip or Spencer, about the
for horror? Sure, the moon being in the first, and me just knowing how pumped Twins fans are for this. So to have the populace on your side, to have the people on your side, I think, because I know for sure Twins fans have been really disillusioned by playoff baseball over the last almost 20 years.
Right, right. This is, I mean, the only, I mean, Mercury has triplicity by night, you know, in early Libra. That's it. And let's see, Jupiter in Taurus, I'm just looking through some of the minor dignities, and let's see, around 14. So between four, it's it's like just on the cusp of its own bound, but it's retrograding into the bound of Mercury, which wouldn't be, I mean, once it goes 1359, it's in the bound of Mercury.
I think I'd prefer Mercury in this case also, even though it is combust. I've done a few sports horaries for the Packers this year, and every time they've had their significator in the 12th house, it's been a complete shit show. So I think you're on point with this. I also did a tarot spread for all of these teams, for like the eight teams that were left, and the Twins had the Four of Wands upright, which is talks about a temporary oasis, like success, but it's like temporary. So I think that they could win
getting to the ALDS, but not right. Going to the World Series.
Well, and
it'd be that, so cool, I have to say.
And on that note, the best card in the spread that I did was for the Rangers as well, which they got the Emperor upright, which is pretty solid. Yeah. A couple other names just to throw out there with the tarot spread. All of the other cards were reversed except for the Diamondbacks, which had the King of Swords upright. And the Twins, which was the Four of Wands upright. So maybe there's like the Diamondbacks make some noise, but I'm feeling pretty solid about the Rangers with this. Like the tarot confirmed that also.
Your technique has been pretty dang good, and it was very clear pulling up those charts. That wasn't ambiguous at all.
Yeah, it was good stuff. Yeah, and then we're still, hopefully it'll play out with the Super Bowl too this year. The Eagles need to start getting it together, though.
They're winning.
There's a lot of season left, right?
Yeah.
Here's Joe Burrow's chart. This is rectified, but do we want to say anything about the rough start that he's had and kind of revisit some of those predictions starting with him?
Man, we were talking about Saturn squares with a lot of these quarterbacks, right? Especially mm-hmm. with the Gemini and the Sagittarius quarterbacks. I think that one of the things that I've been noticing is whenever you have the ruler of your sun retrograding, there's delays. So we see some delays with the Sagittarius, you know, Joe Burrow here with Jupiter stationing retrograde right at the very beginning of the season. And he had that ankle injury or calf injury or whatever it is. So a slow start. So if Joe Burrow does make it to the playoffs, which is a huge if right now, Jupiter doesn't station direct until December 30th. So it might be too late by that point.
Yeah, and he's got – well, the one I had pointed out was that Uranus is opposing his natal Venus for a good portion of the season. He's got a debilitated Venus. If we were to see his chart, his personality strikes me as maybe a Taurus rising or maybe a Libra rising. He's very Venusian in the way that he's very, very charming and likable and very smooth with people. I just wondered when I was looking, we don't have his chart time, but could it be that he's a Venus rising, in which case he's got this sort of erratic energy around his health for the year? That'd be one possibility. But I like where you went to with looking at the ruler of the sun being retrograde. Makes a lot of sense.
I mean, that's kind of the most visible part of a player when we don't have a time chart, right? Like their ability to be a leader, to be like someone who is moving under their own power and personal sovereignty. And when that ruler is retrograde, this is the same thing with Capricorns and Aquarius right now. You look at Jonathan Taylor. He's a late Capricorn sun. And he's been held in limbo while Saturn's been retrograde. And Saturn's going to start stationing direct on November the 4th. So we might see those players start to pick up steam a little bit as well. Someone like Derrick Henry could really start picking up steam when Saturn stations direct, because he's a Capricorn sun as well.
I love the idea of Burrow being a Taurus rising. I just envision him lounging after big wins with a stogie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring up Roger's chart, but for some reason where is it? Oh, here it is. Okay, here. I thought I lost it for a second.
That was some irony right there. That whole situation was crazy.
Wow.
You know, yeah. First of all, I just have to say that as someone who has watched on the sidelines as Spencer has nailed so many wonderful predictions on this show, I felt sort of happy that I feel like, oh, I got one. That's kind of cool. Because my big one in the first show we did to open the NFL season was to say, look, I'm just drawing it in where it is right now, but we've got Uranus transiting right around here in Taurus in his first house. And it's opposing the moon in Scorpio. To me, you know, you could look at it as like that's the exaltation ruler of his ascendant, but the moon represents the body either way. And so, you know, to have Uranus opposite the sun or opposite the moon and so close to the beginning of the season and right away just, you know, pops the Achilles, that was like, you know, and I had just thought, wow, this is going to be a really erratic season for him with the Uranus opposite moon. It's going to go off the rails, and I don't like to predict injuries, but I was like, yeah, does not look good. So that was a big one. That was maybe the biggest injury story of the year so far, right?
Oh, yeah.
By far. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they scheduled those dudes in prime time. Now we have to watch Zach Wilson every prime time game. It's galling.
Right.
But you know, Rodgers was going through a Mars return there too, in addition to the Uranus moon opposition. So in the sixth house, so there's multiple testimonies for that. And I don't know, I think everyone lost when he got hurt, to be honest with you. Even if you don't like Aaron Rodgers, being able to root against him would have been entertaining. Like as a Packer fan, we wanted him to play 65% of the snaps. So we got a first round pick and we wanted him to lose. And everyone loses now. Like he would have been the ultimate heel, you know? So it's really unfortunate that injury happened. I don't know if it taught him any humility. He still thinks he's Superman and can manifest whatever he puts his mind to, quote unquote. So I'm a little bit disappointed that he continues to kind of feel like he's greater than medical science or things of that nature.
I know that we're short on time here. So I'm going to put a challenge out because I'm disappointed in all three of us, frankly. If Travis Kelce and Miss Swift are still together in our next recording, we definitely need some charts. We dropped the ball.
Oh, wow.
Honestly, you're right. Right through our fingers onto the ground.
Holy cow.
If they're together, each one of us has to have a take hold on. For the next show.
I might.
Fumbleia. Fumbleia.
I wonder if I have Swift's chart up here. No, I don't have it. No, it would take me too long to put it in there.
That's okay.
You're totally right, though. That is the biggest story of the NFL.
I can't believe Rogers. None of the three of us thought of it.
I know that she's a Sagittarius sun, and I know Kelce is a Libra sun. So I do know that just as far as their that particular
I know thing. that his Venus is on her Mars in Sagittarius, like almost exact. They could actually be a good pair, which of course didn't make any sense when it first started.
I wonder, the only conspiracy theory I have with that is that I wonder how much Taylor Swift's team paid the NFL to like create this storyline potentially, because
or how much did the NFL pay Taylor Swift?
Exactly. That's what I meant, because they are pumping her, you know, her tour, and she's bringing a whole new cadre of fans that the NFL could just not reach. So it is an amazing advertising opportunity.
I really love the take that he's going to struggle being second fiddle to her. It's like, do you know who his quarterback is? He's used to being second fiddle. It's no big deal. Sure.
Yeah, sure. That's a good point. Well, here's his chart, just because we have a couple of minutes. Yeah. And this is like a noon chart. You know, obviously we're not doing anything super fancy here, but what, you know, one thing that's interesting, speaking of the whole, like, is this real? Is it a stunt? He's got Neptune opposing his Mercury right now. That's interesting. Noticed that right away.
There's a time. I have a time chart for Taylor Swift here. If you want to punch that in real quick.
You want to just share it or?
I just looked it up. Oh, okay. So December 13th.
Hold on.
She's a Scorpio rising.
Oh, is it timed?
Yeah, it's timed.
What is the date again?
December 13th, 1989, 5:17 a.m.
Yep.
Reading, Pennsylvania. Reading, PA.
Yep. I've been there before, actually. Weirdly enough, that was where I did my very first astrology retreat.
Nice. So Sag Sun, Cancer Moon, Scorpio Rising.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because they have a, if you look, they have a Mars-Venus conjunction in Scorpio.
And so his Venus is also in her first house on her ascendant.
Can you put the bi wheel up for this one?
You could do worse.
Yes. Hold on just a second. Let me.
You know that this is the content that your audience wants here. this is a good call.
If they get married in 2 years when Jupiter's back in Cancer, they're going to take over the world.
Right? Kip, this was, you're coming, you know, bottom of the ninth here with, you know, clutch grand slam here.
That was a super good idea. Yeah.
I'm Kirby. I'm saving the home run.
That's right. That's right. Well done. Well played, sir.
Okay. Can you see it?
Yeah.
Okay. I like that Mars-Venus contact.
Yeah.
It's like very.
Look at those Jupiters, too.
I feel like, you know, he might write a song about her.
Both have Jupiter at the very early degrees of Cancer. So exalted Jupiters here. Really interesting.
And they were born, I guess, both in 89. So they've got similar, you know, the similar lineup of cap planets opposite the Jupiter. That's interesting.
And Mercury on top of the Saturn is something. They're going to have...
You know, it's funny, like one of my best friends growing up, Libra, he's a Sag married a Libra. I feel like Libras and Sages can get along pretty nicely. It's interesting.
Yeah. I'm not seeing any huge red flags in this chart for them. You know,
they've got sun moon synastry, which is nice.
No, the two big ones I look for are kind of nailed, knocked out of the park here.
I'm going to say I ship it. Right.
Yeah.
I should.
Yeah. Oh, you know, here's the one thing I will say is we have
a Saturn square with the Libra sun there. That's a
yeah. And then the other thing would be the Cancer moon. that stands out to me. Is that, sorry, I'm looking, is that, whose is the Cancer Moon?
That's Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Taylor Swift got the Cancer Moon.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a Sag Moon and a Cancer Moon, it's a little, yeah, I don't know about that piece. That piece throws me a little bit.
That Sun it's Moon like, synastry is powerful, though. I've seen a lot of relationships that have that, you know.
No, that's true, yeah.
My one concern was that Mercury on Saturn, but if you look at where those two Jupiters are, like, that's a lot of bonification. Like, I'm feeling like that's okay, and I feel like that takes care of that square to Mars, too. I mean, so are there tough spots? Sure, but for long-lasting anything, you need to have
where
some friction.
There? Yeah, yeah, totally. What synastry chart doesn't have a few places? The only thing I would think of would just be like,
flip those charts around, Adam, because we have a time chart for Taylor and we can see where his planets are landing in her natal houses.
Yeah, let me do that.
Right?
We're like a bunch of 12-year-old girls.
You've got like, don't you have, it's so funny, like that there's like all of these, yeah, like it's mostly like young girl fans of Taylor Swift that are now following the NFL, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's
just, and they cut to her every like 5 minutes in the Chiefs broadcast.
That wasn't terrible.
Were you saying put her in the inner or the outer?
Put her in the inner circle. Yeah.
Because we have a time chart for her.
Right. Because then you can see where Kelsey's planets land within her natal houses. Yeah,
got it. Okay. Here we go.
There we go. Okay. So 12th house Sun Mars is not awesome, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that sounds that's not ideal, but there's a lot of good contact here, though.
Yeah.
I like the Sun Moon, especially in Sag. Like they both have, there's something about them that feels like a nice mixture of like sweet and mischievous. Mm. I've listened to Travis Kelce speak on podcasts, and I feel like he's kind of charming and mischievous personality, very Sagittarian. Mm. You know, I pick that up from him for sure.
I mean, we got Venus in the first house and the fourth house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do a lot worse than sweetening up where things come from and where they live in the real world.
Well, and oftentimes I look at where the ruler of the seventh house is for the type of relationship or what people are trying to get out of a relationship. And in this case, Taylor Swift wants someone she can make a home with. But maybe a home that isn't necessarily completely rooted maybe in one place with Aquarius there, right?
That she's already hanging out with his mom.
There you go, right? So
I mean, the other thing that makes total sense to me anyway is that the love and the home would also be rooted in some kind of collective image,
right?
With Venus and Aquarius, right? This is quite the collective presentation of a like a love story.
And his North Node is only going to increase her feeling of sense of home with that North Node being there. So
that's,
I don't know, this is a pretty fairy tale romance here.
We shipped it. It's shipped.
Okay.
Well, I wish I knew more Taylor Swift lyrics to make jokes about it. Like, I've only listened to one Taylor Swift song, and that was the one where she was like the cheerleader on the bleachers or whatever, which was like decades ago now. So I can't claim to be a Swiftie, but
I'm starting to get there because my girls are into it. Right. So, you know, it's like every car ride. It's, can we listen to this one? Can we listen to that one? And anyway, thank you guys so much for coming today. I've got a scoot because I've got a client. It's been really nice to discuss and catch up. And now at the top of our list next month, if this is still a thing, will be updates on Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. Right?
Nice.
The theme of the podcast now.
Yeah, exactly.
Sponsored by Swifties.
Dude, that's what we should title this. It'll get a million clicks.
Ooh, oh, nice.
Oh, geez, dude.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Anyway, thank you guys for being here. Let me promote Kip and Spencer so you can find them. Kip is at Eudaimonia Astro on Twitter. You can find him there if you want to see what he's up to and chat with him about stuff. And if you want to find Spencer, website is spencermichaud.com. YouTube is Spencer Michaud Astrology. Lots of good regular content. I highly recommend Spencer's work on YouTube and Instagram at Spencer Michaud. Spencer's been someone who's come and taught for my students in my programs before. If you like the content I make, I know you'll like the regular content that he makes. And you should definitely keep up with Kip as well on Twitter. We will be back again to talk about all of this, the world of astrology and sports. So thank you guys for tuning in. We appreciate all of you. We have like a small little niche of people who just love this, and that makes us really excited. So
it's fun.
Thank you guys. Thank you guys for being here. We'll see everybody next month. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, friends. Okay. Take care.